from WNYC New York Public Radio. This is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show. This is just one segment of the program. You can hear all Leonard's interviews on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
Azra Nomani's parents founded the mosque in Morgantown, West Virginia, 24 years ago. It's where she attended religious services for most of her life, in the women's section. But after an epiphany of sorts during a pilgrimage to Mecca, her ideas about what was permissible for Muslim women changed, and after she led a march to integrate women into the mosque, she became something of a lightning rod throughout the Islamic world. Here in New York this Friday, a woman will lead the traditional Friday Islamic prayers, and Ms. Nomani will announce her Islamic Bill of Rights for Women in Mosques. She joins me today with a preview and to talk about her latest book, Standing Alone in Mecca, which is published by Harper San Francisco. I'm very pleased to welcome her to the show. Hi.
Thanks for having me here.
The New York Times has written about your Rosa Parks-style activism. Did you ever think you'd be called a Muslim Rosa Parks?
I could have never have predicted my life. This is a script that I could never have even imagined. For most of my life, I just lived in the secular world and didn't even feel like I had a place in my Muslim faith.
Even though you grew up in a very traditional family?
Yeah, but the Muslim community was a place that didn't celebrate my power as a girl and as a woman, and I just felt like I couldn't belong.
Now, does the fact that you were born in India play any part in all of this? I know India has the second largest Muslim population in the world after Indonesia, but still, it's different being a Muslim in India than it is in Pakistan, isn't it?
Well, my parents always lived with open minds, and so that's what India really created in them, because it's such a pluralistic community. And so they always believed in other faiths and in the worship and respect of all people. But sadly, in the community that I grew up in, it was a lot of closed doors.
So they created a mosque in...
My father was the one who created the mosque. My mother actually never participated.
So that was that some kind of source of conflict in the family? Somebody who was religious and somebody who was kind of assimilating?
My mom was religious, but there wasn't a place for her in a public space. And that's ultimately the conflict, is that we are the second class citizens in so many of the communities. And that's what my mom amounted to.
Well, you say in so many of the communities, not all. The Council on American Islamic Relations released a national survey that said that 66% of American mosques put women in separate rooms in 2000, up from 52% in 1994. So it may be a growing situation, but that still means that 34% of the mosques in this country at this point are not separating men and women. So couldn't that have happened with the mosque that your father created?
It could have, but it didn't. And ultimately, for me, 2 out of 3 mosques that put women in the back corners is unacceptable.
Well, could you have still gone to one if you had decided to renew your faith that had men and women together?
A 2-hour road trip to Pittsburgh and a 2-hour road trip down to Charleston.
But you are somebody who's traveled a lot. You were a friend of Daniel Pearl, weren't you? And you were in Karachi at the time he was murdered.
I was, and I traveled the world, and even there in Pakistan, was never allowed to enter a mosque because there the doors are literally closed to women. But what happened with Danny when he went for the interview that cost him his life changed my relationship with the faith. It made me believe that nobody should have to drive 2 hours anywhere to experience an open and inclusive community. And I realized that the stakes were so high that really we couldn't have 2 out of 3 mosques anywhere, even in America, that had closed doors to anyone.
You said after what you saw in Karachi that you began to believe some mosques were safe houses for intolerance.
The photos that the world saw of Danny with the gun to his head, his hands in chain, those were dropped off at a mosque during the Friday prayer because they knew that there would be no challenge. And it was a real wake-up call to me because, you know, even though my father had built the mosque in Morgantown, I never really went because there was no sense of belonging for a woman. And I saw firsthand what the cost is.
But it's obvious you were something of a rebel on every level. So yeah. You didn't go to the mosque very much, even though your father created it. And then you are a single mother as well, had a baby out of wedlock, which would have made you even more of an outcast, not just in Islam, but in most religions.
Yeah, but ultimately what I realized is that, like all religions, I mean, the basic essential truth has to be kindness and compassion. And so, sure, the rules and traditions of religions would make me an outcast in many societies, but that's not the heart of religion and spirituality. And so, especially in this age, we've got to fight like crazy to return to the pulse of religion as it's practiced in the best way.
The father of your child was a Muslim, wasn't he? Didn't he say that if you had the baby out of wedlock, you'd be a criminal? That must have surprised you.
Islamic law in Pakistan calls me a criminal. I'm guilty of a crime called zina. It's illegal sex.
So he could have the sex with you and that's okay, but if you have it with him, then you're a criminal?
Technically, he's supposed to be prosecuted too, but what happens so often is the case of this Aminu Lawal in Nigeria is that the baby is used as the evidence against the mother, and the father is able to simply say, I didn't do it, and they're off. They don't really look into DNA testing.
And what would have been the alternative? Obviously, abortion is something that's frowned upon.
Abortion is unacceptable also in Islam, like it is in so many religions. But at the end of the day, I realized that I had to live with the truth because, in fact, Islam comes from the root of a single mother, Hajar, who was abandoned in the desert with Abraham. And it's from her power and her strength that our religion even came about.
Hajar is Hagar in the Jewish and Christian tradition.
Right, and she's forgotten part of history. And when I did a Google on single mothers in Islam, somehow by chance I found her name. And she was a woman who was left in the desert outside Mecca, abandoned, and she ran in desperation for water. And from the water that sprang up came the tribes into which the Prophet Muhammad was born centuries later. And yet she's forgotten. And it's this courage of so many women before us that we're trying to reclaim.
And that she's her story is something you came upon when you went on your own pilgrimage to Mecca, wasn't it?
Yeah, what I got was this assignment from Harper San Francisco to go to Saudi Arabia. And I thought it was just going to be a travelogue. I thought I was just going to be going to Mecca and Medina, these places forbidden to non-Muslims, and write an interesting tale. But what happened to me there was I literally followed in the footsteps of Hagar. I walked between those two hills because today the government of Saudi Arabia doesn't allow a woman to run. It's too indecent. And then I saw and heard the stories of Khadija, the first wife of the Prophet, and Aisha, who rode on camelback in battle. And I realized that this is our legacy, and I don't have to accept second-class status like the men at my mosque later wanted me to do.
Are the mosques in Saudi Arabia also segregated?
Well, if you can believe it, they're in Mecca. It was just one big spiritual mosh pit. Men and women all in the same space. There was no back door for women. There was no separate space. I would think that it's mostly logistics because let's be honest. I mean, if Saudi Arabia could find a way to put the woman section in this holy mosque, they probably would, this place that doesn't allow women to drive. But it was amazing. It was so liberating. And do you know that for my mom, a woman in her 60s, that was only the third mosque she'd ever gone into in her life because women are so unwelcome in too many mosques.
You said also you were stunned by the wide range of people who were there on those pilgrimages.
Yeah, what I saw were all the faces of Islam that moved Malcolm X when he went to Mecca and really transformed his relationship with the religion. And I realized that, you know, this monolithic understanding that I had that the extremists are basically trying to shove down the throat of so many Muslims was not what I had to accept.
So you decided you'd go back home and you would integrate the mosque, sexually integrate it.
I didn't actually have any intention of that. I really thought I was just going to go back, finish this really nice, interesting travel log, and continue a quiet life in Morgantown. But then, through the beauty of the Muslims that I met on the pilgrimage, I regained my trust in the faith, and I chose on my baby's first birthday to give him the naming ceremony that most mothers give in the first days. I named him Shibli, which means my lion cub. And I took him then, days later, to the grand opening of our new mosque, this brand spanking new building with chandeliers. And it was there that I got the wake-up call. An elder yelled at me and told me, "Sister, take the back door."
And when you said to him, "You know, I just came back from Mecca, and women and men enter through the same door and they sit together," that didn't really mean very much to him?
When the men surrounded me, when I dared to go into the main hall, I made this point, and they said, "Sister, the men are without sin in Mecca. Here we have sin. You are too much of a distraction for us."
Now, this is something that is not unique to Islam. There are any
right.
number of religions that segregate men and women. I've always wondered how the men explain that. Why is it just sitting with a woman is so much of a temptation? Don't they have the power of their own faith to guide them?
That's what I said to the man then. I said, you know, in Islam we have this concept called jihad bil nafs, and it's the struggle of the soul. And this is what I told him. I said, "This is your jihad bil nafs. I mean, this isn't mine. I mean, none of us are supposed to carry the burden of another person's action or thoughts or quote-unquote sin." And so I remained there, undeterred.
Part of the problem in many religions is that it all depends on how you interpret the scriptures. And there are women who have read the Quran and come up with very different ideas of what Muhammad really wanted for men and women.
That's what happened then. When I was confronted with the reality of what we're facing in the Muslim world as women, I started doing my own ijtihad. It's this concept in Islam of critical thinking. And the extremists and the fundamentalists try to say that the doors of ijtihad were closed centuries ago, because that's a convenient way to say no more, you know, returning to thought or even a dialogue. But then it was women, like the woman who's going to lead the prayer this Friday, Amina Wadud, the scholar at Virginia Commonwealth, who liberated me through knowledge of these reinterpretations and the fact that we could take back the faith.
Why are you doing it here in New York?
Well, I really admire the way I used to live in New York City, and I admire the way New York has stood up to the same forces that are trying to keep reform and change from happening in the Muslim world. New York has been a shining light to the world, and I believe that New York City can be a shining light to the Muslim world. We're at a historical moment. What's going to happen on Friday is going to change the course of history. We're going to take women from the back of the mosque to the front, and all inspired by the teachings of Islam.
Although you can't do this in a real mosque, can you?
Well, I'd like to think that the world is the house of God, and so I don't believe like buildings, but you're absolutely right. The imams of every mosque in New York City would not allow this.
My guest is Asra Q. Nomani, N-O-M-A-N-I, a former Wall Street Journal correspondent who's written for The Washington Post, The New York Times, Time Magazine on Islam, and covered the war in Afghanistan for Salon. She has written a book called Standing Alone in Mecca, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam. It's published by Harper San Francisco. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break here on WNYC. Stay with us. We're back with Asra Q. Nomani. Her book, Standing Alone in Mecca, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam, is published by Harper San Francisco. After 9/11, Islam actually came under a great deal of scrutiny, and many people have been quite critical. And one of the things that has been discussed has been the matter of women's rights in the Islamic community. Some people have in the community say it's being used against Muslims to make them look bad. Aren't you just adding fuel to the fire then?
Yeah, they accuse me of just airing our dirty laundry. And I say clean the laundry.
So but isn't it a matter of interpretation? There's another way that... The way many people in religions respond to critics is, well, you know, these are the rules of the Catholic Church. These are the rules of Orthodox Judaism. These are the rules of Islam. If you don't feel you can live by these rules, well, then there are offshoots. There are other versions. Why don't you try your hand at that?
Well, that's basically what we're trying to do, is basically establish within the Muslim community a paradigm, to use that goofy word, where people can live with the type of values that are ones that completely support the role of women as spiritual equals to men. So, the fundamentalists will say, this is Islam. And in fact, I just read an email where somebody said, anybody who goes to this prayer and tries to call themselves a Muslim is not a Muslim. At the end of the day, the Quran says there is no compulsion in religion. And for anyone to simply say that there's one path is incorrect. And what we are not asking all women to come to the prayer. If you're not comfortable, then it's not the right place for you. But allow us to exist.
It's interesting that most religions have variations wherever they're located. And Islam, which goes all the way from the Pacific Ocean to fairly deep into Africa and, of course, exists all over the world, has many variations, each one claiming to be the real religion. Right. We've seen the same thing with other religions as well. But that's been a problem for Muslims, hasn't it? That when criticism has come recently as a result of what one group has done, there's been a kind of a closing of the ranks rather than an opening up and a questioning of whether maybe this isn't the best way to approach things.
That's exactly how I feel. Basically, when I came back to Morgantown and saw what we have to actually face in our Muslim world, I ended up making the entire last half of the book about what our actions in America. And so what I'm trying to do is have a call to action to both women and to moderates to stand up against the extremists.
Well, other religions have very much made adjustments to societies like the United States. The Netherlands is another case where there's been a major anti-Islamic sensibility as a result of the killing of Theo van Gogh. Muslims say we shouldn't have to adjust. After all, the religion is the religion, and other societies should just accept us as we are.
Well, those are the words of the people who want to maintain the status quo. And it's not the words of all Muslims, because the overwhelming response, for example, to the prayer on Friday, is one of so much support.
But haven't you also received death threats?
We have. And this is the minority, though, that cannot define society.
Well, what happened when you staged a sit-in in your hometown mosque?
The men surrounded me. They tried to intimidate me out of the mosque. But, you know, I had just finished training as a volunteer at the women's shelter in Morgantown, and I had seen the power and control wheel, and I had seen what happens when people dare to challenge power and control, that it's intimidation and isolation and threats. And I decided that I couldn't do that. I couldn't cower. I had seen the consequence through Danny's murder. I had seen what I would have had to have done to my own baby within my stomach if I had accepted the extremist interpretation. And so I said basically what so many are saying, which is enough is enough.
When you went to Mecca with your child, your infant son, what was the reaction of most of the people you met to your being an unwed mother?
Nobody asked questions, and I simply proceeded as a normal woman, and that's when I really was liberated. At the beginning, people assumed that I was married, and I went along with it, but then there's a day on the pilgrimage, that's your judgment day. And on that day, I knew that I couldn't live this deceitful life. What purpose was there to that? And so from that day, I decided I was not going to pretend any longer, and I was going to be fully honest. And I was freed, because ultimately, this is one of the tenets of all faiths, that there are no secrets from the divine powers, right?
Well, you come from an area that also has been home to a lot of fundamentalist religion, not just Islamic fundamentalism. Do you see similarities
in what we're seeing in the world?
Well, you're in the Bible Belt, aren't you?
That's exactly the challenge facing all people. This is
well, what
not
happens
unique.
When what yeah. happens when the Muslims in your community are called godless people by some of the other people in town?
It's all unacceptable in my eyes. I mean, this is basically what we have to do is, as moderates, we have to stand up to the extremists in all faiths and in all aspects of society. When we decide that any other people are unacceptable, I don't think we're serving the divine path quite as well as we really should be doing.
You've said that women will do a better job than men if they're allowed to play a leading role in Islam. In what way?
You know, I really believe that the leaders that we've had have put us in a pretty tough situation right now. I mean, it's time for them to at least make room for the women and allow us to play our role. I don't know if it's going to be the solution and we're going to have peace in the Middle East, but give us a chance and let us really try and let us speak. I'm so tired of looking on Google and seeing whether a woman's voice is accepted in the mosque or whether I'm allowed to speak to any man. We need to be fully empowered.
But aren't there an awful lot of women in Islam who say that wearing the veil and following these rules and praying in a separate place is empowering?
And I respect them. I don't ask for them to take off the veil. I don't ask them to move into the men's hall because into the main hall of our mosques. At the end of the day, this is a personal journey. And if you're not there, then I'm not going to force you there. But I know that I am there. And there's so many other women that are there. And there are also a lot of men that are feeling so frustrated and disenfranchised because we're not allowing our communities to have open minds and open doors and open hearts. And so give us space also in this Muslim world.
My guest is Asra Q. Nomani, whose book Standing Alone in Mecca, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam, is published by Harper San Francisco. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You've said that because of men, the poster boy in Islam today is Osama bin Laden. Isn't he considered a rather extreme poster boy by even most of the men in Islam today?
And thank God we finally got a fatwa, right, from Spain against Osama bin Laden. But he defines so much of the Muslim world, sadly. If you look at any of the testimonials from young people in the streets of the Muslim world, most Muslims reject him as a leader. But we have to give some alternatives to the world and to ourselves as shining lights. And so for me, that one of those men is my father, who stood by me all the way along the way, and so many other great men in our community who are really fighting for the tolerant Islam.
But do you also fear at all that you'll become the poster child for bigots who depict Islam as an inferior religion or an intolerant religion?
I think by standing up for the real principles of Islam, we're actually representing Islam better. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that there's some problems in the Muslim world. And if we deny it as Muslims, we're just insulting the intelligence of most of the world. It's time for us to take our responsibility, fix our problems, and play a constructive role in our global society. We can't just sit back and try to be on the defensive. We have to really be on the offensive and work toward creating new realities.
So tell me about the Islamic Bill of Rights for Women in the Mosque. It's in your book here, and you'll be reading that at this service today, this Friday?
I will, because at the end of the day, what happened for me is that I was a woman who didn't even know if I had a place in my mosque because I was never welcome. And when I found an incredibly different experience in Mecca, the holiest place, I realized that maybe we were at a disconnect in our Muslim world with the Islamic principles. And so what the Bill of Rights for Women in the Mosque does is simply assert the same rights that women had in the 7th century when the Prophet Muhammad I built communities. the right to enter the mosque door. Can you imagine that we even need to assert that right? But throughout so much of the Muslim world, we're not allowed in through the door, let alone the front door or back door, any door. The right for us to speak, the right for us to be leaders, the right for us to have visual access to the preacher. Because otherwise, you're stuck in a corner in the basement. They literally, we call them dungeons sometimes. You're next to the radiator, smelly carpets, and it's a reflection of our place in the community.
Telling you you're a second-class citizen?
Separate is unequal, and we have taken it for so long. Women, amazing women, have pushed partitions aside on Long Island in a mosque there. Women have fought against partitions, but the Bill of Rights is a declaration of each of the rights that Islam has given women in the mosque and in the public space.
Do you see some irony in the fact that women in the United States are encouraged to demand their rights at the same time that that Islam in the United States is more conservative than in many parts of the world?
I saw the irony when I called a friend of mine who's working on a report about women's rights in the Arab world and whether they could have it in countries that don't have democracy. I told her, what about in a country with democracy? What about in a country like America? What about the fact that in my mosque, you know, the men have put me on trial to banish me because I've dared to stand up for my rights?
They put you on trial, but they haven't yet banished you, have they?
They haven't yet banished me. And this is absurd. I mean, this is a country that encourages and supports women, and this is how we are empowered to also recognize that Islam does the same.
Have you heard from your son's father?
I have not from him since my baby was 3 months old.
Mm-hmm. So you don't know what he thinks about what you're doing?
I don't know. I don't know what he thinks, but he's clearly not inspired enough to want to reconnect. And I know that he's probably motivated by the same fears that so many people have to stand up against the status quo. But I'm free.
What about your parents? You said your father has stood up for you. Has that put him in an awkward position in your hometown, considering the fact that he founded the mosque 24 years ago?
My father was on the board, and he stood up for me when I went in through the front door and into the main hall. He wept in the kitchen of the mosque when the men took a vote on whether women should be allowed in through the front door and into the main hall. And he cried and he said, please, my daughter is trying to return to the faith. Please make room for her. And they said, oh, Dr. Nomani, don't worry. Everything will be okay for you. And my father has since quit his position. He's lost friends that he's had for a lifetime. And I asked him the day after he quit, Dad, did I ruin your experience with the faith for you? And he said he had his best night of sleep in years because all that has frustrated me and all that I was standing up against is what he believes. I mean, he's the inspiration. He's the one who put these ideas in my brain. And so he's a brave man.
Originally, you were planning to have this service on Friday, Friday being the traditional day for services, at a local art gallery, and that's been changed because of the bad reaction?
The gallery got a lot of threatening phone calls and emails, and people who said that this was the work of the devil, this was the work of Satan, this was the work of the CIA. And the gallery owner didn't feel like he could protect his staff. I respected that, but the other organizers and myself agreed that we had to persevere. We could not be deterred by fear. And this is how the extremists try to win. This is how they try to censor us. And so we're going to maintain a secure location and open to people of all faiths. But we're going to have folks sign up on this form that I've got on my website and on another website called MuslimWakeUp.com. And we're going to try to know who's going to be attending. We're going to try to keep it a safe place.
Have you received a lot of support from other women who are faced with similar situations in their mosques?
I met last night with a woman here in New York City who is having her three daughters leave school on Friday so that they can be part of this historical moment. This is why we're doing it. We're doing it for the little girl so that they don't go through the same crisis of faith that so many of us have gone through as women. We want them to know that their religion affirms them completely.
Meanwhile, what's happening with you and your other career as a journalist? Have you abandoned that for the time being?
My career as a journalist is what allows me to do this job well as an activist. Basically, I take down really good notes on the sermons that lash out against Jews or Christians or women. I track down where the sermons come from. And my 15 years as a reporter at the Wall Street Journal gave me all of the skills that I needed to do this job as an activist as professionally as possible.
Have you discovered that the people most responsive to what you're saying are younger?
It's not at all defined by age or gender or even economic status. It's really about people who are, I believe, enlightened and those that are not. People who really believe that religion's purpose is to improve the condition of the world, not to destroy people or to destroy this world. And older people, older uncles of our community who've been so frustrated because their daughters don't have a place in the religion, write to me and congratulate us and support us.
Azra Q. Nomani's book is Standing Alone in Mecca, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam. It's published by Harper San Francisco. Thank you so much for being on my show today.
Thank you so much for having me here, and thank you for having a city that allows this history to happen.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.